गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नुतिभिस्सेदसादनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन क्रथितां पुराणं विना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्बत्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीं सर्वोपनिषदो गावः दुग्धा गोपालनन्दनः पार्थो वत्ससुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत् यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तं न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः. Let's do a little bit of meditation on what we did last class. We'll do something short today since just part of us are here. Next week we'll do it more extensively. So just sit comfortably, take a few deep breaths. Feel you're very still, relaxed. Being with the breath, I can be more aware and present. So towards the end of the third chapter, Shri Krishna gave a nice explanation of how I go from the gross to the subtle. Because we said we have to go to the subtlest in order not to be caught up in the grosser. So he said, Indriyebhya paranyahuhu. No, it's... how does it start? Sorry. Indriyanam paranyahuhu. Indriyebhya param manaha. Manasastu para buddhihi. Sabuddhe paratastu saha. That's the verse. So he's saying, the senses are more subtle than the physical body. So I see myself as a physical being, meaning a material being. And how do I go closer to myself? I'm something subtler than that, more internal. So I see that I'm a sensory being. I feel the body. So meaning I feel the body, from my experience, my body is a bundle of sensations. So I'm sensing. I feel the body is heavy today, right? I feel the body feels light today. I'm sensing it. And my whole interaction with the world is through the senses. So I'm a sensory being. So this way, bring myself to something more subtle and closer to myself. Whole idea of being a physical being drops, because anything to do with the physical being is really sensory. That's how the physical gets absorbed into something more subtle. Once I see I'm the sensory being, then I can take another step further. I say, well, I'm thinking all the time, they're thoughts. Without the shabda vritti, the thought wave of hearing, I wouldn't hear. I don't hear in the ears, I hear in the mind. Without the thought in the mind, there's no hearing. Without rupa vritti, the thought wave of sight, of colors and forms, there would be no seeing. So all sensory experience has to go into thought. Without thought, there's no experience. So this way I absorb the sensory being into the thinking being, manaha. My whole experience of the world is in the form of thoughts. Without the thought, where's the world? Where did the sensory being go? It didn't go anywhere. We just see it, the subtler aspect of it, which is thought. So I become the thinking being. Then I can look a little bit closer and more subtly. When I'm thinking, then I'm distinguishing between things. Knowledge, understanding. It's viveka, discrimination. I'm hearing, I discriminate between the loud sound and the soft sound. Between this type of sound, that, this word and that word. Everything is understanding, meaning some sort of a series of discriminations, discernments. The established knowledge I already have is previously discerned knowledge. So many thoughts are there, but am I the thoughts or am I the consumer of the thoughts? The one who discerns what the thoughts are. This way the thinking being, the thoughts get absorbed back into the thinker, into buddhi, intellectual being. every thought, every experience is a whole series of discernments. Then I can take a step further than this, more subtle, more closer to myself. How do I know I'm discerning? Oh, of course, because I'm aware. I'm aware today, my mind is very sharp. Yesterday, you know, I was tired, so I couldn't discern as clearly, as sharp, didn't have a sharp intellect then. So I'm aware of the state of the intellect. I'm aware of the discernment occurring. I'm aware of when the mind is quiet, there's nothing to discern then, like deep sleep. I'm aware doesn't need any discernment. I am also, no intellectual process needed. This is then absorbing the intellectual being to the conscious being. There's nothing further to absorb. Since I am, I know. There's no faculty. Just myself as I am. Shanti, shanti, shanti. So this is the end of the previous chapter of Karma Yoga. It talks about to get to the root, you have to go beyond the place where this, where the rajas can be, where the attachment, everything can be, and that'll be the senses, the mind, and the intellect. That's where he said the enemy will be sitting in those places. So to get beyond, you have to totally control, you have to go beyond them. And this is going beyond them is like this, absorbing further. So not absorbing further, but it's not an absorption through and absorption through focus, then your focus then goes out, but through understanding, because we're looking at it. You look at it when you understand, then you understand. But understanding, then you don't get confused after that, like this. So this is what Shri Krishna was telling there. So in the prayers at the beginning, we went through some of them. Let's just look at one of them today. The three we went through were prayers not directly from the Gita, mantras not directly from Gita. The other three are part of the Gita Dhyanam, I think by Sri Madhusudana Saraswati, I think so. But in any case, so these, there's a whole set, maybe half a dozen or a few more, maybe actually 8, 9. So just took a few of them and using them here. So one of them, the short one in the middle, it's saying Sarvaha, Sarvaha Upanishadaha Gavaha, Dogdha Gopalanandanaha, Partaha, Vatsaha, Sudhihi Bhokta, Dugdham Gitamritam Mahat. I just was breaking the sandhi there, saying. So in any case, so this is a very nice one that gives a nice simile. It says, Sarva Upanishado Gavaha, Sarvaha Upanishadaha Gavaha, all the, making a simile saying, okay, take all the Upanishads as cows, right? Like this, okay. So this simile, and then Dogdha Gopala Nandanaha, so who takes care of the cow is Krishna. So that's why the example is taken like this. Because if it was somebody else teaching, it would be done differently. So to take the right example for the right one. So then you have the cow herd and the cow, of course, like this. And then the cow herd knows the cows, understands, because knows everything about them in and out, because, you know, growing up with the families taking care for generations, knows everything about that cow, like this. So same way, the Upanishads, where they come from, that's actually going to be right now, beginning of this chapter, comes from Ishvara. So Krishna, of course, he knows everything about it in and out in this. So he's the right one to be dealing with that. Like this. So, and Partha Vatsa, and who is the calf, is Arjuna. Like this, he's the calf in this one. And what is the milk then? Right? Gitamritam, the immortal, timeless, immortal teachings of the Gita. This is what is from the cow, because he's the milkman, takes out the essence. And so it takes the essence, the teachings out, like this. Okay, so this is, and who is the milk for? The milk is for the calf, so the teaching is given to Arjuna, right? Like this. So the essence of the Upanishads given to him. So the Gita is like, the essence is taken out and then given like this to, you know, like this with the cow. The essence, you know, what it is, the milk, and that to nourish the next, the baby, like this. But then he says, Partha Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta. Who is the one who's getting nourished and enjoying it? Sudhihi, the wise person, the wise people get like this. As Sudhir Bhokta, I think it might be in singular there, the wise person, wise people. In any case, then, yeah, as always, be Bhokta Araha, like this. Because what happens, if you think about it, the cow's milk was made for the calf. I don't know of anywhere else in nature that animals eat the milk of other animals. There might be some case, but not as widespread as humans. So somebody's must have been some very smart person in the past that thought about this. Hey, milk is very nourishing. We can also take for ourselves like this, in this way. So very wise understanding that. So here, same thing, the teachings are here, and a wise person can learn from this, even though we're not sitting there with Krishna himself, even though we weren't in the battlefield in this, the teachings are there, and I can learn them like this. So very nice. And what is that teaching? The essence, because milk is a whole food. It's very nourishing, right? So here also, this is wholesome teaching for us, and then we're wise, we get it we can learn from this. So this way, it's very nice, and the whole essence of it is the essence of Upanishad. Kathopanishad, so much is in here. Now we're studying Mundaka Upanishad. Some things I see that they're in here. From all Upanishads, he condensed and put things in here, and then also made it a practical way to have the teachings. So like this. So sarva upanishado gavaha dogdhava paranandanaha parto vatsa sudhir bhokta dugdham gitam ritam mat. So it's great essence we get. So it's a nice simile like this. The milk nourishes, you know, nourishes physically, but this one nourishes us spiritually. So one of the verses there on the Gita. So let's start our fourth chapter today. So let's see how it starts. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Imam Vivasvate Yogam. Imam Vivasvate Yogam. Proktavanaham Avyayam. Proktavanaham Avyayam. Vivasvan manave praha, vivasvan manave praha, manurikshvakave bravit, manurikshvakave bravit. The Lord said, I imparted this eternal yoga to the Lord's Son, to Surya Devata. Lord's Son taught the same to Manu. Manu taught it to Ikshvaku. So Manu the progenitor of humanity in this era, right, in this creation now, and Ikshvaku is Rishi, who is his son with this. So in this chapter is going to go, Sri Krishna talked about Jnana Yoga mostly, first chapter, the second chapter, the essence, mostly that. Second chapter went to Karma Yoga, so here going back more to Jnana Yoga. But the first section within here, a little bit of an aside, he goes into avatara, talking about avatara. Now for Vedanta itself, that's not avatara thing, not necessary at all. It's not going to help like this. So in this way. So what happens is we can say, okay, avatara, what is good, what for, why? People give many reasons, but main thing, if it's good for teachings, to reestablish the teachings, that's what it's good for, because it helps us for self-knowledge to learn. For other things, from our perspective, it's not as much of something of interest. And also, it's something that, it's something more can help maybe with belief, some sort of belief or something. It can be good for that, but for deeper teaching, it's not as much needed and essential like this. And actually, avatara is something that came much later. Vedas, Upanishad, nothing about avatara is said. Original Ramayana, nothing with avatara either. Nothing saying Rama is avatara. What happens, the scholars, again, the scholars had our notes, one of the great scholars, Swami Tattvedananda, hears his talks, that's why I say, okay, from the scholars I heard from him like this. But a lot of scholars, they also say the original Ramayana, Valmiki wrote, but some body or people came later and tweaked some things, added things. And when you go to certain versions, they even have a section, certain sections they go and they can mark this verse is not from the original. This is not from the original. So most of the place doesn't talk about Rama as avatara. Some places it was pushed in and they said it's later. At that time there was no sitting. No, but they didn't talk about avatara or anything. He just came as example of perfect human like this, going by dharma, everything. But in any case, So this is the interesting. Avatara is a later concept, not an earlier concept like that. So in any case, here, one of the things here, so early in the creation, you know, some point then, these teaching, Krishna saying, he taught the Surya Devata, and then Surya Devata passed it on to humans, etc. Meaning that this teaching is aparusheya, not come from the human mind, is coming from Ishvara. That's what we can say established from here. Because, as we said, if it comes from the human mind, it comes no matter how great the human mind, it's still reflection of, reflect, reflected light, so it gets skewed. So can't be that. That's why the teachings are the most important. People get caught up in the guru and then in the personality of the teacher or something. Then the teacher's not there, they have so much, oh no, what are we going to do, so much problem. So of course, the master, the great thing about is you see this come to life. We talk about these things, but you see without a doubt somebody's, you know, that this is clear reflection in us. You know, there's a partial reflection, they're very clear, but still, that's individual, it's still through some reflection, some reflecting medium. So this is, no matter how pure the reflection, still it's reflection like this. So this is one of the important things here. So teachings come from Ishvara. So he taught this to this yoga. And here yoga, of course, in Gita is twofold, karma yoga and jnana yoga, because those are the two things that are taught. So what is this eternal yoga? Both are, you know, both are being taught like this, both of the ones who are being taught here. And he's saying, yogam proktavan aham avyayam. Avyayam, it's eternal. And meaning, it's always something that is relevant at every time. It's not that the Upanishads, the rishis, that vision, that the eternal vision of the rishis is, in ancient Vedic times, it was something. Now it's, no, it's not. Not for us nowadays. Or the Gita is good in a certain place and time. It's good for people living a certain lifestyle, a certain place. Not true. Actually, it's probably the most universal of any of the texts like this. Some of the texts are for a certain culture, a certain place, certain belief. Here there's no, what belief do you need to have in here? For Gita. So this is it. So in this way. And so that's why it's avyayam, eternal. Also, what we're looking for is also the eternal. The moksha is also eternal, because when moksha, when I know I'm the self, I'm the self. I always was, never wasn't. So it's not something that is also a temporary thing like this. So this is the important what with this, in this way. So in this way he taught, and teaching is passed on like this. So it continues here. As you said, the first section is going, first 8-9 verses, builds up a little for avatara in this, and that's something that isn't as essential for what we study. Evam parampara praptam. Evam parampara praptam. Imam rajarshayo viduhu, imam rajarshayo viduhu, sakale neha mahataha, sakale neha mahataha, yogo nashtav parantapa, yogo nashtav parantapa. O Arjuna, the royal sages knew this, which was thus traditionally handed down. Due to long passage of time, that yoga is lost in this world. So, saying the Raja Rishis, kings who were saints, it was passed down to them like this. So, meaning that it was actually, since the king saints, but also the, you want Brahmana saints, the ones who are the scholars or renunciates, also for them. So, like two different lineages are passed down if you want. And but if you think about it, how busy the kings must be, and they're the ones who know. Like King Janaka's example, always given like this. Even though being busy with everything, can know this. So very interesting how like this. But what happens is, the kings are very busy, we're very busy, people are very busy. So then, some things have to be put aside, right? So then this gets put aside, and then that's why he said over time gets lost. What gets lost? What I don't pay attention to. I don't have time or interest to do, so it gets lost like this. They say you use it or you lose it, right? Well, I barely have anybody to speak Hebrew to, right? And then there's one person at work, our CFO. He comes through the meditation class like once a week. So it usually logs on before other people. So for a few minutes, I speak some Hebrew. That's it. That's my speaking Hebrew now. And what happens is, some years ago, the acharya from Israel, a very senior guru guy from Israel, I learned from over the years so much when I was in the ashram. So when he was in the Bay Area then talking to him, he and some other person from Israel were saying, oh, you now speak Hebrew like an American, like this. So accent, and I'm missing words in this, because you don't use something, then it gets lost. So, you know, here, just an example. It's not as, you know, people come to U.S. from other countries. Most, it's a country of immigrants. So people come. The first generation still have whatever, from whatever country they came from. Let's say the next few generations just marry even within that same background. But the language, culture, slowly, it, you know, won't be kept up because not in that place. Naturally, because people expose other things, busy other things, there's change. So same way, like this, okay, this is handed down, but then get slowly, we'll get lost naturally, because one time when I was in Puri, Jagannath Puri, I can't go into the temple itself, wrong genetic code, what to do. But what happens is right next, I didn't know at the time, Shankara Mat, Puri is right next to the temple there, like this, because there are four main Shankara Mats. So we went into there and we're talking, and the person was saying that the reason we're next to their temple is our job is to make sure that things are kept up properly like this. So though they probably don't have authority over it, I'm guessing there's probably a whole other taking care of temple, but if things start going off in what they're doing, they'll probably just tell, hey, you know, keep things in place. So there's probably a reason why the mats are, they're going to be near main temples like this. So like this, to keep it going, because things easy to forget and to slide away. So if that's why also in these teachings they have to be so particular careful, because if the teaching is skewed a little bit, 5% now, then next one teaches, it'll be skewed 5%, eventually what's going to be left. Like this. So that's why here parampara, he's saying. Parampara is the pass down, and name for lineage, they also give sampradaya. Sampradaya, it's samyak prayachati, like this. What is given down very systematically, very precisely like this. Because very precisely, so it doesn't get confused, so the confusion isn't there like this. So it's passed down, but then, you know, if things get lost. Naturally, over time, they get lost like this. So this is you're pointing out here. Let's see any other important things here. That's pretty much. One other thing here, one of the reasons he's saying here also passed down to the kings, Rajarishis. The more power you have, more position, more important to have understanding too. Like a judge. Judge has very high, you know, regard. So a judge that we think isn't doing dharmic way, then it really puts things off like this. Like, you know, if people don't trust in the courts, then, you know, when it's biased or this, that, we think, you know, that's really where it should be, dharmic like this. So here, that's why it's so important that ruling class in ancient times, at least the Vedic way, is they'll have the king will be there, but they'll have their guru. The rishi is somebody they'll take advice from. The guru says, no, don't do like this, they don't do like that. So then to make sure that they doesn't the ego isn't like that. If you've seen all the scriptures like this, they have in Ramayana you have, is it Vasishta or Vishwamitra? One of those two is the guru of the kingdom. So he'll come, they'll take advice, like they'll worship him in this way. Prime Minister of India has been, he would come to Swami Dayananji, like this. I think his other guru is, with respect, so also showing, you know, similar to the older times like this. But in any case, so this is how important it is for the, if the ruler doesn't, the ruler not standing up to higher standards, then so much more problems come. So that's why this is so important. In any case, so over time, then it gets slowly, slowly degraded and lost. Now, of course, let's say that today's science technology. It's technology based on science. Let's say now it gets lost. It gets degraded, lost, and people go back to a simpler way of life and everything. Has gravity gone away? Has electromagnetism gone away? It hasn't gone away. It's eternally there. That's why this is eternally there. Even if nobody, let's say no people in the world know it, it's not lost like this. Tagore, he was very famous for when he was very much down, that he found the Ishavasimidam Sarvam from the beginning of Ishavasi Upanishad. And he said, well, if all the Upanishads, all this literature, everything will be gone, but this will be left, that's enough. From there, everything else can come up. That kind of gave him inspiration again. So it's universal truth, so it can't be gone. Like this, it'll manifest somehow.
Ya evayam maya tedyah, sa evayam maya tedyah, yogav proktav puratanah, yogav proktav puratanah, bhakto sime sakha cheti, bhakto sime sakha cheti, rahasyam hyetaduttamam. Rahasyam hyetaduttamam.
So saying, okay, then I'm teaching this to you today, right? This same yoga. So he's teaching now, why didn't, and now, he's his friend, close to him, everything. Because they're contemporaries. Arjuna and Krishna know each other a very long time. Why didn't he? So Arjuna might say, well, we've been together so much over the years. How come you're teaching me now? Now the world's going to be so busy. Now this, how come before, up to now? You know, before, and actually even said they were 12 years, right? Staying out in exile, so much time. Why then? Well, the thing is, he didn't ask Krishna then, can you teach me? Because it's something that is somebody's to ask, traditionally have to ask for it to be taught. Ask question, because without question is just going to be given. Not something to give, preach to the masses in this. Like this, something somebody wants to know, they come in. This Swami Chinmayanandaji, he took it out and made more teaching. Okay, let's go and teach and have camps in this. And that, you know, the other people had also taught in general like this, but it's not been something really big, mega advertisement, all this. It's not for that. Somebody has to really want to come and understand like this. So that's why. Now he's at a place where he wants to know. Right? So then if you talk to somebody, if you try to tell these things to somebody who, you know, just tell them, you know, they might be polite and listen a little bit. Most cases, after a little while, you know, something else. When somebody's ready, they're going to want to know. So it's not to share, but we can't expect to say, so, you know, a little bit. If somebody's interested, we can talk more. Otherwise, you know, why bother? They're not interested. Somebody has to really want like this. So that's the main reason like this, why now he's teaching him, not before. So this Eva Ayam Adya, this exact same thing, not something different he's teaching in this way. And he's saying, Bhakta Asi Me Sakha Cheti, or my friend, my devotee, Rahasyam Hi Etatu Tamam. This is the highest secret. This is the greatest secret. And the thing is, the secret usually is something hidden somewhere, we think. Like here in the US, right? That they said that there's so many UFO encounter things that the government has been keeping hidden. Now they make it public. Oh, people thought, so they made a lot of files public and nothing there is, whatever they made public, I didn't read or this, I just read from what they say in newspapers, right, online. And it's just saying, Yeah, you know, okay, a few things I couldn't explain, something could, nothing conclusively saying, yes, look at this. So people are saying, oh, there are a few document secrets they're still keeping. So there's some things kept secret, hidden like this, right? But this is a different kind of secret. The greater secret is in plain sight, where you won't expect it at all, like this. That's, you know, that's the thing where you won't think it's like this at all. How would you expect it to be like that? You'll expect it to be some other place, some other way. So here, like the world existing, right? The world is existence. It's right there. Everything's existing. Everything's like this. It's so obvious that, you know, only the present is there. Because past and future, where are they? They're not there, only present. Is it hidden? I'm a conscious being, obviously. But it's hidden that it's right there in front of us, but we don't notice it because we're too caught up, too busy. Like the kings are too busy to take time to look at it like this, to understand it. So in high, it's right there. So here, the God, where's the God, where's the consciousness? It's hidden right within my own heart, right there. It's not somewhere else. I have to go to somewhere to find it. There's some holy place in this, right? I have to lead a good life, or I have to follow a certain, you know, get my check mark on certain things, then I'll go to the heaven, and there, the God I'm going to find there. Then, and some of the things and some of the religion, what they say to do to get there is kind of, you know, how skewed the mind can be. But in any case, even be a good person, be very good, be selfless in this, and you'll go to the heaven, and then there you'll see the God. Why will it be there? Is the God only there, not here? The poor God isn't allowed to come into this world, can only live up there in heaven. So it doesn't make sense. So in our own heart, right there, but, you know, we don't notice it. In plain sight, it's not, but it's something somewhere like this. So this is what he's saying. So it's the greatest secret, and the greatest secret is right there. Look how great a secret is. It's in the Vedas, the Upanishads, it's there. It's saying Tattvamasi very clearly. How many priests there are that know the Vedas by heart? You know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. How many of them can say, yes, I'm that? Very few, if any. Too caught up in the rituals and whatever else there is, all the other stuff of life. Again, many are very pure, good people, nothing wrong with that. They're like this, because it hasn't been given as, okay, this is the most important thing, the essence of it, and it's said that, it's right there. So, it's right there, it's not that it's hidden, but plain sight, and then we gloss over it like this. So this is what's saying here about it. Oh yeah, there is another interesting point in here. With this Puratana Heights, right? It's going to be, it's always available like this. It's always available, it's there. It's not that it's not just, you know, for us to. So what happens is, so we say it's always available, it's eternal. So we say something is eternal. So being eternal, there's different kinds of eternal. One type of eternal is called pravaha nityam, eternal flow. Kind of like when you have the river flowing, it's not just a solid thing there. The water isn't just sitting there, but the flow is constant. So it's a constant flow. The seasons, it's a constant flow. Yes, summer come. Here we don't get as much summer, winter, fall, this, but you know, some places more, but still, we still have the change of seasons. Constant flow, as long as earth will be here, constant flow, it's like this. So something can be an eternal flow, the universe manifesting and, you know, unmanifesting this, the eternal flow, always there, this way. So the Vedas themselves will say it's eternal flow, because when the universe goes away, goes into potential form, where is Veda? So the Veda itself, the words and this, yeah, it'll manifest again, it'll go again, like all universal laws like this, comes and goes. So this is eternal flow like this. But the thing, that's one thing. The teachings, then, you can say in some ways an eternal flow. But the conscience is Atma, this isn't a flow. If it was a flow, it would also be part changing, changing like this. So Atma itself is not, it can't be that. You can say Paramartika Nityam or Atyantika Nityam, it's absolute eternal, not an eternal flow, but absolutely eternal because always there. Not something that is sometimes coming in this form, sometimes that form. A flow meaning it can come and go, but it'll always have the potential to come back like this, seasonal. But this, no, not a flow, it's constant, always there, like this. So this is the difference between these two. So here is saying it's eternal, that's that kind of eternal, not the other kind of eternal, like this. So now, again, Sri Krishna taught the first, second chapter, then there was a question. Then he finished, he finished talking. So Arjuna had a question, he was confused. You're saying you're the consciousness, but then fight. How does that go? So then he taught him about Karma Yuga. So now that he finished teaching, you know, he finished previous chapter, he summarized saying this is the eternal teaching I taught him, now I share with you. That's it. So Arjuna will have a question which will make him continue. Otherwise, Arjuna will say, thank you, I understood, very good, and then he'll go do his karma yoga. Arjuna vacha, aparam bhavato janma, param janma vivasvataha, katame tad vijaniyam, tvadada proktavaniti. Arjuna asked, your birth is later, the birth of Lord Sun is much earlier. How am I to understand this statement of yours, that you have taught the Lord Sun in the beginning of the creation? So, now Arjuna, on the one hand, he does take Krishna as Ishvara, as the God, because that's why he took him as a charioteer. Otherwise, that's why he chose him and not his armies for fighting the war on his side. So he does have that understanding, so it's not... But on the other hand, as the individual, as Krishna being born, being manifest in the world, then yes, Krishna being right there, okay, you're the Ishvara, but you're here, how is this? So then, curious, okay, how can this be? And this question helps then to trigger that Sri Krishna will talk more and discuss this. So that's what happens in this way. So it brings about his answer. In this way we can say. But so that's how much we can say. But then the question then helps them to have Krishna continue his teachings. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Bahuni me vyatitani, janmani tava charjuna, tanyaham veda sarvani, natvam vetha parantapa.
The Lord answered, O Arjuna, many births of mine as well as of yours have gone by. I know them all, O Arjuna, you do not know. So I go through so many things, but as Sakshi, I'm aware of all of those things. You can say they all come and go within Sakshi. That's one thing we couldn't say like this. Now what happens then is we have, as Krishna's avatara, then there'll be differences. There'll be differences between the avatara birth and between the birth of the human. Can't be the same thing. Because somebody is going to work because they have to, right? They have a duty, they have to in this. Somebody is volunteering. They can volunteer, go, then they can just leave. It's different. They're different things. So there's differences. So as a samsari, I'm born, right? Samsari is born. How come samsari is born? So, in any case, we're talking about, okay, so there's differences between human birth and avatara. There has to be a difference. So difference, first of all, why is a human born? What makes the human be born? Right? There has to be some reason for it. Why? Because of karma, right? Punya papa brings, so karma, karma pala. So because of karma pala, I have to go and then I have to go through with that, right? So this is the cause for my being born. There has to be avidya. Because of avidya, I take myself not to be what I am. I think I'm limited. So there's desire to be fulfilled. So I do karma, and I do karma with expectation, and then there's punya papa, and then so it continues. So that's why we're born like this. So it's due to avidya, due to our karma pala. Now, Ishvara. Does Ishvara have, can Ishvara have punya papa? Can Ishvara have avidya? Doesn't have. So can't be born from the certain same reason, like this. So first of all, the reason that Ishvara is born can't be the same like this, right? So that's one thing. So it can be, as we'll say, as we'll discuss, so it can be for compassion, for helping, something like this. In this way, we can say, right? For that. That's why avatara descending. It said descending, because we're not descending. We enjoy some other plane in our between lives. We fall back. We don't come back willingly. Fall back. We're born. We cry. Right. Oh no! What am I doing here again? But Ishvara descending. So that's one thing. The difference is why. Now the essence of the person also will be different because the swarupa, right? Like this. So when we're here, we're continuing with avidya, samsara. We're going through samsara. Samyak sarati, moving and moving very strong, violently, like this. So for us, it's not merry-go-round, it's sorry-go-round, right? going. We don't want it to keep going, but it keeps going. Like this, whether we want or not. Some of the time we're saying, yay, very nice, but most of the time we're not saying that. So samsara. But Ishvara is going to, how can Ishvara be samsari? Right? Otherwise, if born in the same way, meaning from dharma, punya papa, karma, then makes Ishvara samsari, but can't be. So it can't be born because of that, it can't be living because of that, because it nitya mukta, always liberated. Ishvara cannot be bound, it's not possible. Right? All knowing all this. The difference also is, this is in the, when we study the Tattva Bodha, that for us the Karana Sharira is Malina Sattva, meaning it's Sattva but has Tamas in it too, Tamas or Rajas in it too. And the way we see that is deep sleep, you have Ananda, that's why it's Anandamaya Kosha. Oh, how wonderful. But there's also Avidya. So it's sattva, but mixed with the tamas, the avidya covering also. So Ishvara, the difference is, if you go to the maya, you go to the, like the upadhi, there it's pure sattva. For Ishvara, the upadhi will be pure sattva, so there's total knowledge. That's why we're limited knowledge, Ishvara full knowledge, clarity. So always not bound, so can't be bound. That's the difference here. This is the second thing. And then why were we born? What is the reason, you know, we had, what is the cause and why are we coming here? What is the purpose of our being here? So, for our purpose, it's to, we have to consume the karma. We have to go through the karma. We can't, right? Karma has to be gone through. We can't get rid of it. We have to go through like this. So, and it's, comes for sukha dukkha is how the karma goes through. The other thing, everything else, all the other things around are just implements to help with that, instruments to help sukha dukkha for going through karma like this. So this is the human. Ishvara doesn't have sukha dukkha, doesn't have to go through karma pala, right? In this way. So then it has to be something else. So here in here it'll say for helping to establish dharma, to help to keep the balance, we can say like this then. So this will be the difference. So there has to be a big difference between why Ishwar, the whole process and the whole thing. Why? Because it can't be the same thing. Same thing, then what's the difference, Ishwar or the individual like this? So this is what's being put in here. Okay. Now, another thing here, important thing is, as we said earlier, that the avatara is a matter of faith, of Shraddha only. And avatara, if I have Shraddha, that Shri Krishna's avatara, that's great. But what good will it do? If I read the teachings and learn from it, then it's doing some good for me. So meaning the teaching, the Shastra, the Guru is what's more important. Guru more important than avatara. Because avatara, if avatara is your guru, great, here. Arjuna is learning from Krishna himself, so great. That's the important thing that I learn, I grow. Otherwise, that's why people have faith, but what is the faith good for? If the faith helps them learn and grow, then good. Otherwise, it just stays as, you know, I have to do because otherwise, you know, it stays at that level. So let's see. In number 6 here. Ajopi sannavyayatma, ajopi sannavyayatma, bhutanamishvaropi san, bhutanamishvaropi san, prakritim swamadhishthaya, prakritim swamadhishthaya, sambhavamyatma mayaya, sambhavamyatma mayaya. Though I am birthless and deathless, though I am the Lord of all beings, still I take birth through my own maya by restoring to my prakriti. So my own maya, born through my own maya. We're born maya, we don't understand through the power of maya. But this one knows it. They say the difference is when you go to the magic show, the audience all come and they're all, wow, how did that happen, right? Some of these things I don't know. Like I've seen where they take, you know, where they saw the person in half, where they took two different people and they saw, and then they take and mix it. And now this one comes out with the pants that this one had, this one with that. So many things like this they do. How in the world did they do it? And then there's one magician who likes to put on YouTube, shows some magic tricks, shows first and then shows how it's done. Oh, how they did it like that. Amazing. So you can't go from behind. Some of them you see outside, they're doing it and everything. How did they do it? But in any case, so for the people watching, but for the magician or the assistant that's helping, no question what it is. None of these things are, you know, none of them are going to be actual magic or this or none of it's so like this, but although how much it seems like it. So the difference between the audience and the magician knows, they're not tricked. They know the whole trick. So here, how can Ishwara be doodled by Maya? Right? Maya is dependent on the Ishwara, it's not this. So he comes, has to be born through Maya, through his own Maya in this way, right? This is how he's born in this way. So this happens just like the magician and audience are, he's on one side, he sees the whole trick from behind, we're seeing just the other side. So same way, Ishwara and Jiva are the opposite sides of Maya. One is seeing from this side, one is seeing from this side. We see the world, we're seeing from this side of Maya, right? Because we're seeing through the Maya. But the Ishwara, the other side, doesn't see any Maya, any world like this. The Ishwara is not going to see a world. The Ishwara is just, in any case, Ishwara is not an individual like you and me. If individual like you and me, then it would be some limitation. So in any case, so how can this this birth and everything, talking about with him? So what happens is, there's an interesting thing. Actually, the Shankara says that in this, the Ishwara is as though having a body, as though being born. Because how can, it can only be as though. Because the actor, it's as though doing. So the Ishwara can only be as though, otherwise it would be samsara. Mm-hmm. The Ishvara knows it's mithya. How can the Ishvara, the God, as though it has to be? So there's a very interesting point brought up about this. It says like this. There's three kinds of realities, if you want to call it. There's absolute reality, right? This is paramarthika sat, absolute. Consciousness is absolute like this. Then there is vyavaharika sat, empirical reality, meaning the objective world, like this. The objective world, like, you know, the table, the sky, the objects, all these things here, the rules of nature, they're all here. They're all manifest. So they're existing here, but not at the same level of reality. Because if they're the same level of reality as that, then, you know, that thing had to change. Then the infinite has to change into this. This we're discussing in the Thursday class, actually, now. So if you have the one infinite reality, which is the base of everything, this has to be not as solid, as real as that, like this. Now you have, that's vyavaharika, now you have pratibhasika. Pratibhasika is projected reality. Projected reality is, today's a wonderful day. Yesterday was not so good, it was miserable, too much rain. A lot of rain, that's vyavaharika, yes. Oh, it's miserable in this. That's pratibhasika. I project on it. Right? So we live in both of these worlds. We have our vyavaharika, everything as it is around me. And then my ideas I put on top of my pratibhasika, like this. So these three are there. Now one thing to do is, look, you're in your dream. You wake up. So that whole dream world, where did all the ideas come from? They were superimposed from, they came from ideas from the waking state. So meaning, they were superimposed. The whole dream was superimposed. And its level of reality, you know, compared to the waking state, it's unreal, right? It's superimposed on this. So same way, and what is consists of ideas from the waking state. So same way when the waking state you can say is the substratum for all the things in the dream. So same way the paramarthika sat, absolute, this world will be superimposed on that, just like dream to waking, and waking to the absolute. Now, when you go from the dream to the waking, where did the dreamer go? Where did the dreamer go? It didn't go anywhere. It just got, you just notice, oh, the dreamer is me, but just, I thought I'm something else. It came back into the waker, but it's not any different. Same way from waker, from individual to absolute consciousness, to your consciousness, same thing. Waking up, seeing what I think I am isn't what I am, it's this. So the substratum for this whole reality is like this reality to the dream, the dream to this reality, this one to the absolute. So that's these three types of reality. Right? The paramarthika, vyavaharika, and pratibhasika, the absolute, the relative, or the this one is empirical, objective, and then the imaginary, the like this projected. So now, the question comes now, you say, okay, Shri Krishna is born. Avatara comes. Is avatara mean it has to have a body to interact? Now, is that body, is it paramarthika? Can it be paramarthika sat? It can't be paramarthika, it's a form. Mm-hmm. A form meaning that it's not absolute, because absolute isn't form. Form has to be an objective object, so it can't be paramarthika. Oh, the God came, people say it's paramarthika. It can't be paramarthika, right? So that's one, it can't be. So can it be vyavaharika, right? Vyavaharika, if it's vyavaharika, if it's objective, for something to be an object, it has to go through laws of nature. So for an entity, a conscious entity to come in, it's karma to come in. Because if it goes in a certain place, a certain time, the karma has to impel it to do that. So how can the God have karma? So can't be. So it has to be pratibhasika, the only thing left. It can't be. And so we're born, we go through Maya and then through physical thing. That one can't go through the physical thing, goes through physical thing, become an object. That's why I said, well, So Sri Krishna, avatara coming, cannot be, has to be pratibhasika, has to be then, you know, in that level, not made out of physical matter, but out of projection like this. That's a nice thought. This Swami Dayananda was talking about, pointing out, very interesting. Very interesting because it can't go through the other process. So it's an interesting idea like this. Then won't have the physical, but just directly through Maya, meaning it can't be a physical entity like this. And in any case, from the avatara standpoint, or the Jivan Mukta standpoint, they don't have a body. Right? For us, Jivan Mukta is a body. For them, they're the consciousness. This body is just incidental thing. So for avatara from the get-go, like that, there's no body, they're just incidental. And then the laws of nature be there. Okay, many people pray or this, very pure heart, so some manifestation be the help, okay, could be from this, because everything will have to be karma pala. So like you'll say, okay, you know, the Pandavas with Shri Krishna, this, okay, so karma pala, you can say. In any case, this is a very interesting thought idea about that. But with it, the whole, these three levels of Paramartika, Javaharika, and Pratibhasika are discussed, which more than how Shri Krishna is coming into the world, understanding these three things are important for Vedanta. So piggybacking on how Shri Krishna can come into the world opens the discussion for something like this, which is more essential for us, I think. So that, maybe that's what the reason why Swami Dayananda in his discussion on Gita is bringing that up. Could be, but in any case, interesting like this. So we'll bring that up again next time, these three levels, because these are this very essential, important, very helpful for understanding, you know, how this projection is, the world projected. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.